Hello and welcome to The Awakening, 2025-26, Planet Waves, Annual Readings. I'm Eric Francis Coppolino, your astrologer for the next 16 hours or so, or however many of these audios you explore. This segment today, recorded just past the Capricorn solstice, I'm starting at about 9:28 a.m. on 12/21 in Kingston on a chilly, sort of slightly snowy day here. This segment is intended as a kind of an overture of the events of 2025 and 2026. I'm not going to get into specific dates that things happen. Those are documented in the ebook accompanying this reading called The Awa, which is available right there on your delivery page. But what I want to do is give an overview of a kind of a consolidated rendering of the events of the next 18 months and provide a little bit of context. Of course, the context of a reading for a person, such as yourself or me, is the ways that we meet up with these events personally. So astrology is almost always about the intersection of collective events described in planetary transits and personal experiences that are the kind of reflection of those events in one's personal life. And so that is what the written readings have all done. And then what I'll be doing in the course of the next 12 readings for the signs and the rising signs. In the Awa, I explain that I'm using the solar house system in the personal readings, and that is how I contextualize these events. And the solar house system is also applicable to your rising sign, where it then is the whole sign house system. So if you know your rising sign, you get a second reading, perhaps the more significant of the two. But unlike many sun sign astrologers, I write my readings to be applicable to the rising sign as well as the sun sign. You can find out your rising sign by going to astro.com. You do need your time of birth. If you don't have your time of birth, then read for your sun and your moon. The chances are fairly good that the moon did not change signs on your birthday, but if it did, that's a clue to your birth time. So we are in kind of right on the threshold. We're in it because some of these transits have already begun, and some of them have a very wide orb in time. Anything involving Neptune, for example, has a few years orb in time, but a lot comes to a peak in 2025 and 2026 in ways that are highly unusual. In the presentation that follows, I'm going to talk a bit about how far back I have had to check specific events. But for example, working with Kirsty Melto, who used two different software applications, SolarFire and Rial, we had to search for some things all the way back to 1 BC. And have discovered that what is happening now is literally, actually, in fact, unprecedented. And there is a second kind of layer of this, which is that we have all of the classical planets and the modern planets involved in sign changes in a very close proximity. Mercury is changing signs constantly all the time, so we're leaving that out. But Venus and Mars are involved in retrogrades. Mars currently, Venus in the spring. And they are dancing over to signs. Mars retrograde is between Leo and Cancer, which is significant given all of the Aries that comes up in 2025 and 6. And Venus is retrograde in Aries and Pisces, tracing the movements of much larger planets. So we get a little bit of a warm-up of that territory with the Venus retrograde, which is in, I think that's in February and March. I can't be giving, we're going to have to work on the specifics for time and date in other locations. They're given throughout the readings. I'm here today to talk about theme, to talk about the overall sense of what this is about. So even accounting for Venus and Mars, there's unusual activity. But what is more unusual is that we are experiencing all of this under the new backdrop of Pluto in Aquarius. And this has been a topic of much discussion in astrology, though I'm not reading many of these other commentaries. No one seems to send them to me, and I don't go looking for them. I would reckon that there's been a lot of discussion of Pluto in Aquarius. I don't really know what it's been about. But my sense of what Pluto in Aquarius is about is that we are in the midst of a major redefinition of the relationship between the individual and the collective, as moderated, as filtered, as experienced through the technology environment of Aquarius. And so this is really meaningful because with Aquarius, we know that we have something about collective experiences and social patterns. Aquarius generally is about patterns, but it's the sign of human groups. It's also about social patterns, and it's about the technology environment. Those waves of Aquarius are, as you wish, they're light waves or they're water waves, but they are waves that crystallize patterns. They are a pattern, basically. And we now are living in a world where the entire social pattern is being filtered through one kind of field, which it is a field or a dimension, which is the digital dimension, now rapidly becoming the generative AI dimension, meaning synthetic thought, synthetic creativity, as well as all the consequences of that, including people being transported to this synthetic astral plane, which is how I think of the internet, as well as our entire social reality being a kind of a subset of the wider technology environment. And so this is making available all kinds of social control that was not available in previous times. And face it, technology is always used to gain control over people. I cannot think of any technology events that were not used in some way to gain control over people, including Nixon remarking that everyone should have a television set in their home that he could turn on automatically from the White House. Nixon's communication director was Roger Ailes, one of the most important people in the foundation of Fox News. He was a direct minion and operative of who are those people that own Fox? I can't come up with names on the fly when I'm talking, but he was the Murdochs. So Ailes was a minion of the Murdochs and also of Nixon, and the TVs that turned on automatically to brainwash everybody, well, that was Fox News. That was the brainchild of Ailes and Nixon. And now we're about to experience a Trump administration where he seems to be drawing most of his cabinet appointees from Fox News presenters. So the TV show has become the reality show, has become reality as we're seeing it. So we experienced the personal impact of Aquarius during the 2020 crisis. The 2020 crisis involved the threat of a technology-generated virus, MN908947.2. That was SARS-CoV-2, which exists only in a computer. It's never been found in a person. And then this became a social control mechanism. That was under Saturn in Aquarius. Friendly little Saturn. Now we have Pluto in Aquarius. We need to pay attention to this. And so the underlying theme of everything I am talking about involves your relationship to the collective through the internet, through social interactions, which are all regulated by the internet, through various forms of social pressure. This includes the possibility of social credit scores being imposed. We're all checking our FICO scores. Well, that the concept of a social credit score is a similar thing. Will they do this in the United States? Well, I mean, it might be hard in, you know, Fargo, South Dakota, but not that hard. Maybe in the Black Hills, they can't put cameras on trees. But everything else Orwell was talking about in 1984 has pretty much come true. And he was talking about surveillance in forested areas in 1984. And that now can be easily affected with drone technology that can just follow someone anywhere. And by the way, as I'm recording this, the drone story seems to have come and gone. But we're now having the presence of drones in suburban areas, including military bases, be normalized. And so underneath all of that I'm saying and the numerous transits I'm describing in the readings that I'm about to describe is the relationship between the individual and the collective, you and everyone else, your family, your friends, your company, your general social group, and as far as you can reach into society, moderated by, controlled by, basically, digital technology. That's about Pluto in Aquarius, and now we're about to experience this concentration of power of Pluto in Aquarius. You think, well, power is pretty concentrated already. Well, for this and other reasons, the technology is going to advance so rapidly that it is inconceivable now, as it was in 1942, that the whole world would be rigged up with computer technology that people carried everywhere, tracked by satellites. That was inconceivable in 1980. And we are living in this reality right now. And so as I've described of Pluto and Aquarius previously, we get three basic possibilities. Possibility one is these likely to all exist concurrently. The group imposing its power on the individual. Now we've seen plenty of this since the 2020 crisis. That was really this kind of Olympic Games of the collective imposing its power on the individual, always using some technological means to do that, including restaurants, excluding people. Well, that was 2021, really, mostly. So the technology environment becomes extremely oppressive toward the individual. This already happened. Now Pluto concentrates this effect. Second, individuals standing up against and to collective movements. This is also something that was demonstrated in the 2020 plus era, though we are likely to see more of it, a greater expression of individuals standing up. Now, this is somewhat slim pickings. I mean, it remains true that most people are governed. Their bottom line of governance is their fear. They will be governed exclusively by what makes them afraid and deem what is real, what scares them the most. Now, if you could measure how ridiculous this is, it would be the highest possible degree of ridiculous, because this means that anyone who can frighten you can control you. But look at it happen. Watch it keep happening. The reason people always give for being controlled is this thing or that thing might happen. Therefore, I've got to do what I'm told, which is another way of saying I must be controlled. I submit to being controlled because of the possibility of that bad thing that person who wants to control me, that entity or whatever that wants to control me, has imposed upon me. I think we have come a long way since 2020 on many issues. The state of the so-called health freedom movement is quite tragic now, because a lot of people who posited themselves and gained a lot of followers and made a lot of money as freedom advocates are now going along with some of the most oppressive tactics of the much larger society, the government, and the medical industry. Pfizer and Moderna and the CDC and all of this, and so they've become minions of the government, basically spreading the same lies while disguised as freedom advocates. So this is a thing to watch out for. And those doing the watching out need to be very highly discerning of what you accept as possible and what you accept as true in the middle, particularly in the middle of any high pressure, do it now kind of situation. All right, third possibility is the possibility with Pluto and Aquarius of group evolution. That is to say, the entire group evolves. Now, I have sadly not found very many examples of this. Now, I don't know all of human history, obviously. We don't know who exactly painted these absolutely beautiful paintings in the caves in southern France, et cetera, et cetera. But I'm always looking for examples of when a group evolves. The best examples I find are musical groups that go through artistic transformations that require everyone's participation. That's where I find the most of these. And these have a short time span, 10, 20, 30 year time span at the most, sometimes much less. But if you have examples of group transformations, of group evolution, I'm definitely interested. All right, let's take a short break. This is Kristen Williams. Sitting Still by Kristen Williams. Okay, so I believe in working from the general to the specific, from the background to the foreground. So deep in the background of everything is that we're now in the Pluto in Aquarius era. And the main question in the Pluto in Aquarius era for each of us is, what is our relationship to the collective as moderated by the technology environment? And we might also put on the table, what of in-person collective experiences? Is there any way to have those be not influenced or less influenced by what digital has done to transform us? Okay, so much of this further that I'm going to discuss takes place in Aries. That's really the awakening patterns are in Aries. We'll get to what those are in a moment. And they're covered extensively in the AWA and then in each of the readings. But speaking of Aries, here's where the inner planets come in. And I mentioned this a moment ago, and I keep writing about it, but Mars represents Aries. And Mars is retrograde between two signs, doesn't always do that, between Leo and Cancer. And that is coloring or kind of hinting at what we are about to experience. Mars is also retrograde opposite Pluto. This only happens twice per century. Mars is opposite Pluto every 2 years, but the retrograde, when I went looking back through time, I went back about 500 years. It's about, in our epoch, it's about twice per century. So that's quite rare. And this is a kind of herald of the individual Mars versus the collective Pluto in Aquarius. So it's the individual Mars and Leo retrograde, that's very inward and individualistic, opposite Pluto in Aquarius, that is rather collective. And always the reminder to keep your eye on the influence of the digital environment, the transhumanizing, which is another way of saying dehumanizing influence of the digital environment, which is turning us into something other than the people that we were in previous decades and previous centuries. Okay, Venus. What is so interesting and exciting about the Venus retrograde in the spring is that it starts in Aries and backtracks into Pisces. And this is tracing first forward, Pisces to Aries, then retrograde, Aries to Pisces, then forward again, the movement of Saturn and Neptune into Aries. These are big collective influences. And Venus is not only dancing around Aries and Pisces, it's making conjunctions to Saturn and Neptune throughout this. So it's kind of like Venus is ringing a little bell or sending out personal invitations or seducing people into whatever this is about. And it's almost as if each one of these kind of little smaller events prepares for and describes the next larger one. Okay, so also in the springs, Neptune first is going to enter Aries after about 14 years in Pisces. The Pisces era is not done. Neptune will retrograde back and then re-enter Aries. That's in 26. Saturn is doing the same thing. Saturn moves much more quickly. It's probably about five or six orbits of Saturn around the sun for every orbit of Neptune. But they're moving into Aries together and doing the same approximate thing where Saturn will enter Aries, retrograde into Pisces, and then go back into Aries where the two will form a conjunction. And here's where we get into the extremely rare stuff. Checking back to 1 BC, there have only been four conjunctions of Saturn and Neptune in Aries over the course of 2,026 years. There has never been a conjunction of Saturn and Neptune right on the Aries point, right in the first degree of Aries. And so this is emphasizing the Aries point in the most wild way. Okay, tied for wild. There was stuff in the 20s that was this wild, and then look what happened. But what the Aries point emphasizes is the intersection between the collective and the individual. So this is the theme, and it's coming through basically on every station. There's like, you can't miss it. You could cut the chart into pieces and randomly choose one of them, and you would still get the same basic theme. And so this Aries point thing, the sidereal vernal point, also called, is the reckoning point between the tropical and the sidereal zodiacs. It's what they're singing about when they sing about the dawning of the age of Aquarius and all that. Too much to get into here. It's a well-known thing, and it's like setting up a picnic in the middle of, or your living room in the middle of an intersection, or right on a clover leaf of an expressway, and the cars are whizzing past, and you're sitting there, you know, with your Stouffer's TV dinner and microwave popcorn, and the cars are flying past the living room couch, veering around the coffee table. So this too puts us all much, much closer, directly in the pocket, the connecting point between the individual and the collective. Now, emphasizing this, Jupiter wraps up its transit through Gemini. And when that happens in June, it enters Cancer, and it will therefore be making a right angle to the Aries point, and Saturn and Neptune dancing around the Aries point. This brings the entire matter closer to home. The Aries point extends into the first degree of all the cardinal signs. So early Libra, early Cancer, early Capricorn, early, what did I leave out? Aries, Libra, Cancer, Cap. And then also the midpoints of those. That's why Beltane is Samhain, and so that's why these holidays concentrate so much energy and why they're so important to human experience. So there's eight major sensitive points on the Aries point, but we're getting this at full strength. One Aries and one Cancer. So that's why I'm saying get ready. This is incomprehensible, and we're going to go through it. You know, so I'm here as like your guide on the white water rafting experience, and as I see it, my job as the guide is to help us all get through the rapids without anybody's raft capsizing. Keep our camera dry, and the picnic lunch in the cooler will be dry on the other side of this, and you won't soak your Patagonia rafting outfit, or even get your life jacket wet. Okay, so let's keep playing with this concept of Aries and with rarity. And this brings in a real discussion of the media environment. One of my discoveries of the past couple of years has been the way that as my work with the McLuhans since 2016 has helped flesh out, again, before a live audience, that would be you, is how influential the technology environment is to human transformation. But when you plot that against the astrology, it is crazy. Maybe you're familiar with Rick Tarnas's book, Cosmos and Psyche. You could do a whole, I could easily write a book, a series of articles have been coming out. You might say like media, cosmos, and psyche. So here we get a big one. Now, this is the conjunction of Chiron, which has been in Aries starting in 2018. Conjunct with Eris, which has been in Aries since the early 1920s. It's a long transition. Eris moves very slowly. It moves the slowest through Aries. So it's in Aries for about 130-135 years. So Chiron, with only has a 51-year orbit, can go around twice and have two conjunctions to Eris in Aries. And that's what's happening. We're having the second one, Eris in Aries, of this epoch. The first one was 71-72, very important years in social history in the United States, incomparably. I mean, it was the second 60s. The 60s was... Chiron was involved. I mean, it was the Uranus-Pluto conjunction in Virgo opposed by Chiron in Pisces. That was the 60s. And this propels society in every form, whether we're talking about technology or art or social movements. And every facet of society took a surge forward under the influence of 60s astrology that basically runs from around 1962-63 out to about 1967-68. Then a whole new theme opens up, and we have Chiron entering Aries and then making a conjunction to Eris in Aries. And this is the early 70s. This is the second 60s. The early 1970s, where pretty much everything we take for granted today was in some way born. So I would trace that back, for example, to the Stonewall incident in Greenwich Village in 1969, things like the Woodstock Festival, the moon landing, the Kent State shootings, and so forth. And now we're going to have this conjunction happening in Aries, in the thick of all of this. And that spans from the spring of 25 into the spring of 26. It takes a year for this to complete, but the time warp is quite wide. So I think, started to see the full effects of the Chiron-Eris conjunction when we had the solar eclipse. Remember that? Remember that very exciting solar eclipse in April of 2024? Just this year. Barely 6 months ago. So we're in this now, but there's always a new manifestation when the conjunction tunes up. And here again, we have the individual Chiron in Aries juxtaposed with, in contrast with, Eris in Aries, which is this massive, sweeping, collective force. And it often involves transformation by the media environment. This astrology repeated, well, it's a repeat of the Gutenberg era, Chiron and Eris conjunct in Aries, which led to the printing press, the single most important technology evolution probably since the alphabet was devised and prior to that, the stone axe, or the controlling of fire, or something like this, the invention of the spear. And so the hint here is that we need to really watch what the technology environment is doing to us. And I'm not saying that iPhones are evil. What I'm saying is that no one much cares about the effect of any of this new technology when it is turned loose with a massive marketing campaign, incredible sex appeal. I mean, those early iPod ads, which became the iPhone, were irresistible. Everyone had to have one, and pretty much everyone did. Okay, so this accounts for Aries. There's two major events we're tracking in Aries, which is Saturn and Neptune entering Aries, making a conjunction, and Chiron and Eris in Aries, been there for a while, making a series of conjunctions in 25 and 26. All right, let's just cover a few more points. We've covered most of it, but I think that as a major background factor, the thing that kind of caught me off guard, because I wasn't thinking this is going to happen too in the midst of this, is Uranus change signs. Now, this is one of the seven-year cycles. Uranus entered, went from Aries to Taurus. The transition was in 1819, along with Chiron entering Aries around that same era, 1819. So there were two major sign changes in 1819. And look at the effect. Just study 18 and 19, and you'll see the correspondences to Chiron and Uranus changing signs. Now we're ready for another Uranus sign change. And this is something that I put together the last night of writing the AWA. I've been in this, you know, I've written basically a book. I'm like, wait, what's this one other thing? Oh, Uranus and Gemini. So here we have a planet associated with technology through historical correspondences and through a kind of a connection to Aquarius and so forth, entering a human sign, the human sign being Gemini, the first of the human signs. There's two babies depicted. You meet a ram in Aries, and you meet a bull in Taurus, one of the most dangerous of all the animals to humans, by the way, is the bull. Learned that listening to Gene Shepherd, who has Uranus rising. Uranus, big time, rising in Gene Shepherd's chart. If you know who he is, I've been introducing him on Planet Waves FM. All right, so I was familiar with the history of computing a little bit because I got curious when I acquired a copy of the first National Geographic after World War II. And I cover this in the AWA. It's right there at the end. And the first issue of National Geographic, right, the people who know everything about the world and geopolitics, and they do a 20-page spread on all the wonderful new things that are going to be extant in the post-war world. And they're talking about incredible trains, which were already dying by the end of World War II, but that they were really killed by the era of air travel. And so they're big on air travel in this Nat Geo. There's going to, you know, the number of airports is going to double. There's now a jet. They're like, hello, this is a jet plane compared to a propeller plane. It goes much faster and can fly further. Waterproof matches and atom smashing machines. The cyclotron is illustrated. Now you can buy a cyclotron on Amazon. All this and that, and appliances, and microwave ovens, and it's going to be so convenient, the radar range, and on and on and on. And I'm reading through this thing the first time thinking, what's missing here? Not a single mention of digital technology. Nothing. Yeah. We've just won World War II, according to the official line. Because a guy named Alan Turing invented the computer, which was then used to crack the Nazi code. Left out. What are the possibilities of this? Well, Uranus and Gemini was 1942 to 1949. And I was aware that there was quite a lot of advance in computer science between 42 and 49. Then I pulled out a chronology of computer science between, the early history of computer science. And I just looking at this thing with bug eyes, thinking this is just astounding. And it's being left out of the popular press because the New York Times would get its ideas for technology stories from National Geographic because the editors have a little nothing else to do sitting around because the reporters and the sub-editors are doing all the work reading National Geographic. I assure you, thousands and thousands of editors around the country had subscriptions to National Geographic and they all read this article. Only it completely left out digital technology, computing technology in any form. Not in there. So, what actually happened? Well, from 42 to 49, computer technology goes from this like nascent, barely extant thing to full on, basically mainframe computers at the end of this timeline. At the beginning, it's analog computers with like tape and crunching away much faster than human mathematicians who remained very important people through the war. door. We end up on the other side of this with memory. That's a new, you know, that was a new thing, like memory, like screen memory, and to be able to load a program into a computer, that was a new thing. And so essentially what we think of as the modern computer is a creature of development, scientific development, under Uranus and Gemini. And the movement was very, very fast, but kept away from the public. Now here we are, back at Uranus and Gemini. We know there are massive advances in what I'm calling synthetic thought and creativity. That's quote-unquote AI. Let's be more descriptive than the cliche. And synthetic thought and creativity are affecting everyone. I work in a room full of Apple computers. That's my preferred type of computer. Well, between those devices, my printers, I've got enough, data to fill, a library, and enough, workhorse technology to be able to kind of like turn around and produce a book in a day, including printing the book in a day without anybody's help. Okay, well, this is where we're going with artificial synthetic thought and creativity. It is the ability for people to write songs. Who needs Radiohead? You just say, write me a song like a Radiohead song. The thing in a minute will come out with a song like a Radiohead song. And you might think, ew. Except for the people who are younger and younger are completely acclimated to this whole branch of existence. And, Maybe the real Radiohead will sound as quaint to people in the near future as Vivaldi sounds to us today, or Mozart, or something like that. Oh, isn't that quaint? You know, they didn't put on a CD; they just sat in the drawing room with a string quintet. They all can afford a string quintet in their living room, drawing room, or whatever. So you got just pop in the CD, it's like $10, and there you go. You've got a string quintet. Well, here we are so deep into transhumanism, where we are now ready to assign two synthetic thought devices the most elemental of human functions, of human expression, of human experience. And this troubles me for a lot of reasons. The most significant is that true art, which includes art in any form, is the product of a human experience of growth, of confrontation, of their inner being, of their inner shadow, of the traumas that have afflicted them. And art provides the human experience with a transformative outlet for their growth. And any actual artist will tell you this, that their art is integral to their growth. And it's one reason why I encourage so much creative expression in my horoscope column and in my articles, and kind of treat everyone like they are an artist, or potentially so, which is because we don't really have therapy anymore. And, therapy by text message is not therapy. Therapy is largely afraid to confront that, such that it may exist, is afraid to confront the actual human condition. And most of it's paid for by insurance, which ain't going to work because the therapist has to stay in the bounds of what the insurance and the DSM prescribe. And then that, speaking of proscribe, we get the prescribe, the medication that is a kind of a hedge against therapy. You don't need it. You've got all this lovely Prozac. And then we find out that every one of these SSRI, every one of these mass shootings is committed by someone who is on these drugs. And the drugs come with a suicide warning. So the drugs are so dehumanizing, especially SSRIs, but they're all like this. that they come with a, I think it's called a black label warning that you might off yourself. They're going to make you feel more human, but then you just might end it all. Oh, that's really human. And what they don't say is that, oh, well, the last 40 mass shootings, I read a list once of these to track them, and many of these celebrity suicides involve medication. That's transhumanism. And so these medicines suppress creativity. This is what the artists tell you. This is why artists often go off of them, sometimes to their peril. That we are assigning the deepest levels of experience to these synthetic devices. It's one thing to have a database that that transforms your phone book or your Rolodex into a thing you can quickly look up names and numbers. It's another thing to assign to a machine language, synthetic thought. Express a song for me. Make me a painting. Well, you know, go make your own painting. Why? And why do you go make your own painting? You make your own painting because you confront the blank canvas. That is not something that I think an AI device cares about. Is there ever a blank canvas? And the AI, synthetic thought, synthetic creativity. So another element of this deep background, because this is a slow mover, is Uranus and Gemini, 7 years. And my prediction is that on the other side of these 7 years, we will not recognize the technology. I mean, I'm about to invest in a new MacBook. You know, I got my last one in 2018, so it's time. Well, I'm thinking this thing's going to be in a museum in 7 years. If anyone cares about the past, humans have always had a hard time caring about the past. But now, you know, we kind of live right next to the memory hole. By the way, P.S. Sedna in Gemini. So my take on Sedna, which is 11,400-year orbit, but it's moving through the signs in about 60, 70 years because it's kind of close to us right now. Sedna in Gemini. The 60s are over, finally. I think it went into Gemini, and went into Gemini, I think, in 66. And finally, fully entered, it went into Taurus in 66, and then transitioned into Gemini over 9 months between 23 and 24. So we learned from, it was interesting watching the delineation of Sedna in the astrology community. It was announced, I think, in 03 or something. Let me get that right. Discovery of Sedna. And this was a time when there was a lot of attention being paid, at least in the astrology set that I was hanging out with, including all the people who were associated with Planet Waves, including some who were not, whose names you never knew, who were offline tracking these developments. Very exciting to be having these new planets beyond Pluto being discovered. And Mike Brown and company name Sedna for the god, well, the goddess, creation goddess, and sustenance goddess of the Inuit people in the North Pole, to call attention to the North Pole. They're very good at calling attention to things. And so Sedna became a kind of a sigil of the global warming problem. I know this is itself controversial. A lot of people don't think that there's any form of climate change going on. I mean, you know, without using news reports, I can only base my observations, you know, right? Seems like there's climate change going on. The winters are not as cold up here, very simply. What this did, I think, was very interesting. The Sedna became associated with the physical climate of the Earth. Now, that is a meaningful thing in Taurus. Very earthy, the first Earth sign, fixed sign, the thing we count on. The mountains are going to be there. And the late 60s were the first time that, for example, Exxon or Mobil, it became ExxonMobil, acknowledges that there may be climate heat up associated with burning all of this carbon. Now, that does not make it real, but I'm inclined to believe the secret reports of corporations. In my experience, the secret reports of corporations often tell you the most about what's going on. So Chiron enters, Sedna enters Gemini. Well, it's going to take with it the sense of the environment. Sense of the environment. And we need to keep in awareness, high up, our sense of the environment in the form of the mental environment, the noosphere, the realm of all collective human thought and information. That's Gemini. It is human. There's babies who talk to each other. And Gemini is associated with commerce, buying and selling things. And now we have this distant, broadly sweeping 11,400-year orbit. I mean, the last time Sedna was in this position, there were glaciers where I'm sitting. Sense of the environment. And I think we need to learn to pay attention, to keep a kind of a pulse on the mental environment in as it is emerging from the background and influencing us as individuals who are kind of foreground of our own lives. But we're so influenced and conditioned and controlled by the background forces. And so I think that Sedna is going to kind of provide an acupuncture point or a pulse point where we can feel the pulse of the mental environment. Now, this is going to be joined by Uranus, which is, you know, going to make a bold, dramatic series of conjunctions to Sedna in Gemini. That also takes place in 26 and 25 and 26. So this is about us. You know, it's easy to think of astrology as being about all that stuff out there and all of those the big things that it influences. And this is pretty much one of my contributions to astrology, is to really go out into the big world while always maintaining the tether to the individual world, because we're all in one collective experience here. You know, despite the kind of bubble nature of the ego and the tendency of these technologies to create bubbles of secrecy and bubbles of opinion and bubbles of other viewpoints and bubbles where the virus is a democratic virus or a virus is a Republican virus or that drug is a democratic drug and that other drug is a Republican drug or whatever it may be. We are here together now. And the astrology of our time keeps saying here together now in this form. Here together now in that form, here together now in this other form. And then you are part of that together. Doesn't really matter without you. And so that is some context. And that is what I plan to be exploring, have been exploring for the last 3 months, doing these written readings, and plan to be exploring for the next week or so, doing the spoken word readings, of which this is the warm-up, the introduction. Thank you for being a customer of The Awakening. Thank you, if you are, for being a Planet Wave subscriber. This keeps us going through the slower months, and because I keep at it all year long. And reading the horoscope on a regular basis and the articles will all make much more sense in the context of what I've done in this annual reading, including the AWA book and the forthcoming audios. Again, thank you for your business and your trust. Signing off, 10:23 a.m. on 12/21, the Southern Solstice of 2024. Bye for now.